Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Kia ora, welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast and thanks for tuning in this week. I'm your host Jordan, I'm a mum of one, soon to be two boys and a lover of all things birth and a very passionate storyteller. The goal of Kiwi Birth Tales is to empower, inform, educate and connect families from New Zealand and all over the world, talking about the things that are so often kept to ourselves or shared with only our nearest and dearest because of this taboo that seems to surround sharing stories about birth. All stories deserve to be heard, no story more important than the other, and with this podcast you'll get a variety without bias. The podcast is not intended for medical advice. I'm not an advocate for any particular mode of birth or birth care, and this platform is simply here to share these beautiful, empowering Kiwi Birth Tales with you all. So I hope you enjoy. In this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Liv, and Liv takes us through her initial pregnancy journey, which unfortunately ended in a miscarriage, and then she talks through the processing of that and falling pregnant again. She talks us through her pregnancy experience and what that was like for her, what sort of birth she was planning, and then into her birth story, which was not what she expected it to be. And so she talks us through the sort of processing of some birth trauma after her birth. And then she unfortunately had an episode of sepsis, which was pretty life-threatening at the time. So we discuss what that was like for her and the treatment of that and how that sort of impacted her journey into motherhood. So I think this is a really unique episode and I really enjoyed speaking to Liv about her experiences. So I hope that you find something in there that is a useful takeaway. I did have a bit of a sick little baby when we recorded this episode, so Liv was a trooper, listening to him snuffle throughout the whole thing, but I've tried to make that as quiet as possible, so hopefully it's not too much of a deterrent while you're listening to the episode, and I hope you enjoy. Hey Liv, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, it's nice to be here.
Awesome, would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Liv. I'm 26 years old and I am from New Zealand. I am a registered nurse at a private skin and cosmetic clinic. And I have a blog on motherhood and nursing that I write about every now and then. And in my family, there's Kian, who's also 26. He grew up in London and he works in engineering recruitment, but he used to be a professional rugby player. And we have a six-month-old son called Blake.
Yeah, awesome. And what was the journey like to pregnancy for you guys?
So it started, well, we met 4.5 years ago and I was studying at university in Dunedin. And he was just there playing rugby on a bit of a sabbatical from Ireland, where he was playing rugby before that. We met in Dunedin and did a bit of long distance, and we went back and forth from the UK and New Zealand, just living in both countries. And he got a job as a professional rugby player in the UK, so we moved there, I think it was the end of 2019, and we lived there for 1.5 years. So he was playing rugby down in Cornwall for about 6 months before I found out I was pregnant the first time. And we were, living in Cornwall. I was working as a nurse in a big NHS hospital there, in the theatres. And I found out I was pregnant in March 2020, We were definitely not trying for a baby, but I'd been off the pill for about a year just to have my hormones level out after being on it for so long. And I was just using Flow just to track my periods. And then one night I went to the gym with a friend and we were doing a core class and I literally couldn't even do like 3 sit-ups. So I thought something was, not that I was very good at core to begin with, but I thought something might be up. So I just went to the supermarket on the way home and picked up a few pregnancy tests and yeah, it came back positive, which I was pretty terrified about, to be honest, considering we were in the middle of, well, not in the middle, in the start of a pandemic, I should say, and everything over there with COVID was really fresh. No one really knew what was happening. And I was working in the hospital as well. So I felt a bit vulnerable, yeah, being pregnant and potentially exposing myself to COVID. So I definitely wasn't as excited initially as Kian was. Kian was really happy, which was nice. And then, yeah, I think we told our family straight away. I was only about 5 weeks along. And we just had a discussion with them around, you know, the safety of being in the UK versus New Zealand with COVID. And we made the decision just to move back to New Zealand as soon as possible. We had a feeling that the borders might close. So we wanted to get back home just to avoid any, being stuck in the UK, basically. So basically in one weekend, we packed up our whole life and got on a plane back to New Zealand. So on the plane back, I was definitely feeling a little bit off. And I didn't think it was anything serious. I just thought, you know, I'm scared of flying anyway. So I was quite anxious about flying for 24 hours. And I felt much better when I got off the plane. And then we went over to Waiheke and self-isolated for a couple weeks. And about 3 days in, I got the feeling that something, you know, wasn't right with the pregnancy. So I made an appointment with the GP and got a blood test and it came back quite low. Came back low. And so I had another blood test a few days later and that confirmed that I was, about to basically have a miscarriage. So that was really hard being in lockdown. We'd sort of made the decision to move back to New Zealand because of the pregnancy and to have that, you know, end sort of was the opposite of what we were trying to achieve by keeping the baby safe by leaving all our friends and Kian's family over there. So yeah, I think that was really, it was really tough mentally and that was basically where our journey started, because after that we sort of realized how badly we did, you know, want that baby. So
And how did you go, I guess, like processing losing that pregnancy and such huge life changes for you guys moving across the world? And I can just imagine it wouldn't have been an easy time at all. So do you want to talk us through grieving for that loss and just where you were at that time?
Yeah, I think for me, it was definitely a longer process than it was for Kian, because obviously it was, you know, my body and I'd sort of prepared, you know, you think about the future and you think of that baby being in it and you change your whole life around, you know, that baby. So I think for me mentally, it was really difficult. I think I coped by just getting back straight back into work. So I went back to my old job where I was working before I left to England as a nurse, and that just kept me really busy. And yeah, I think I just slowly healed, I guess, over the next few months. Got into exercise and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how did you decide, or did you decide that you want to start trying for another baby? I know you said that after falling pregnant, you know, it was something that you definitely both wanted. So how did you go about deciding when the right time might be to try again? And yeah, what did that journey look like for you guys?
I wanted to wait a few more months to start trying again. So we did that. And then I think we started trying in June. So I had the miscarriage in April and we started trying again in June. It didn't happen straight away. And in August, we were in another lockdown. I think it's a curse or a blessing, something for my pregnancies. In Auckland, and we were living with my dad at that point while we were trying to look for a house to buy in Auckland, and we were staying in an Airbnb because my dad's partner was high risk to COVID. So during lockdown we moved out while I was working as a nurse. Yeah, so we were in an Airbnb, and I was almost hoping that I wasn't pregnant at that time, just because we didn't really know what was happening with the lockdown, and everything just happened so quickly. So yeah, I was working full time and we were just doing a supermarket shop, and I just decided that I would get some pregnancy tests just to check, just to see if I was,
just in case.
Yeah, just in case. Yeah, basically. And I was still 4 days away from my next period, so I knew it was really early and I didn't have any symptoms. So I went and picked up some pregnancy tests, and I got the blue dye ones, which in hindsight was a bad idea because apparently they're the worst ones to get, especially if you if you haven't even missed your period yet, because they can be quite, I think, unreliable for positives. So I took it and it was like a really, really faint blue line. But again, I didn't really believe it because I'd looked it up online and it said that they can be quite inaccurate. So I decided to wait a couple more days. Again, I didn't have any symptoms at all. I just thought I was going to get my period, but I was, yeah, just making sure. So I did one of those first response tests and yeah, it came back with a second pink line, and I was definitely in shock. I went and showed Kian, and yeah, Kian was really excited. I just told him straight away, and yeah, so that's how we found out we were pregnant. Nothing too exciting, but yeah.
And what about your sort of mental health and how you were feeling in terms of this pregnancy, having had a miscarriage previously? Was that playing on your mind? And yeah, I guess, how were you feeling?
Yeah, I think to begin with, I was really anxious about the chance that I might have another miscarriage. And so I scheduled a blood test just to make sure that my HCG levels were rising, and they were, which was really reassuring. And that sort of kept me positive until I could get that early dating scan. I think about 7 weeks we got that. Yeah, so once I saw the heartbeat, I actually relaxed a lot. And I just thought, there's nothing else I can do on my end now apart from, you know, eating healthy and looking after myself. So I think I relaxed a lot more after that dating scan. Yeah.
Yeah. And how were you feeling throughout the rest of your first trimester? Did you have many pregnancy symptoms that popped up, or yeah, what was your first trimester like?
Yeah, so my symptoms were pretty bad in terms of the tiredness. I didn't get any nausea or vomiting really. I just had that like all day fatigue, which was really hard while I was working 40 hours a week as a nurse. So I would basically just get home and like collapse on the couch and just wake up at like 10 p.m. and put myself to bed basically. And that sort of continued for the first couple months. But that was pretty much the only symptom. So in that sense, I was really lucky. I was just really tired. And then as soon as the second trimester hit, I felt great. To be honest, I had heaps of energy and it was summer, so
Awesome. And did you choose to go with a midwife for your care, or what model of care did you choose?
Yeah, so in lockdown, I think there was a bit of a baby boom. So a lot of the midwives were snatched up really quickly. And I did leave it quite late. I left it until I was about 11 or maybe 10 or 11 weeks to find a midwife. I was just using my GP before that. And by that time, I couldn't find any like midwife, independent midwives. So yeah, so I was just given one from the community, which, to be honest, I wasn't too upset about it. Like, I'm a nurse myself, and I feel quite confident in knowing, you know, if something was wrong or, So I think that was, it definitely wasn't a bad thing for me. And my sister had been working as a doctor in obstetrics for 2 years at that point. So she was a good person to talk to if I had any problems as well. Yeah, so.
Cool. And did you do the sort of standard testing that's offered in New Zealand in your second trimester? And did you end up finding out the sex of your baby?
Yeah, so we decided not to get the NIPT test, the blood test, just because we decided beforehand we didn't want to terminate the pregnancy, even if, you know, it found something like Down syndrome. And so we just decided to wait until the anatomy scan. And I was feeling really healthy anyway, so I was pretty confident with that pregnancy. We got the anatomy scan, I think, at 19 weeks, 20 weeks. And we did want to find out the gender, so she wrote it in an envelope and gave it to us. And yeah, so all the organs and everything looked great. They did find an abnormality called a subcenturiate lobe, which is basically just an extra lobe off the main placenta that was joined by blood vessels. And so my main placenta was sitting on the front of my uterus, and then that lobe was just sitting behind on the posterior part. So that in itself doesn't cause complications, but it does have an increased risk of complications that go with it, like a risk of prematurity, or it can affect how well the baby's growing, or if the blood vessels are sort of covering the cervix, it can cause something called vasoprevia, which is a life-threatening complication for mum and baby. But luckily, I didn't have that, so the blood vessels were going over the top of my uterus, not over the on the bottom, so wasn't any risk to baby when he was going to come out, sort of thing. It wasn't blocking the exit, which is good. Yeah, so I did definitely feel some anxiety around that when I found out about it, just because it is quite rare. I think it's one in every 500 pregnancies have it. So yeah, so once I did a bit more research on it, I felt a lot better. But because of that, I had a growth scan scheduled every 4 weeks, so just to check on baby's growth, which I was happy with anyway, sort of, yeah, relieved my anxiety.
Yeah, cool. And did you do any antenatal classes or birth education or anything like that in the lead up to your birth?
Not really, not as much as I should have. I sort of left it to the last minute, and then at 37 weeks I started panicking because I knew that I was about to give birth and I kind of had no idea what I was about to go through. So I didn't read one baby book my whole pregnancy, which in hindsight that was pretty stupid. So I did your birth course at 37 weeks in my panic, so yeah, that was actually really helpful in just teaching me some like breathing techniques, and helpful for Kian to know what to do around supporting me through labor and just the different stages of labor. So that was, yeah, that was really helpful. And we did antenatal classes at Parent Center, so again, I didn't learn too much from that. I think Kian got a lot more out of it than I did, just because I knew most of the stuff that they were talking about, but we got a really good coffee group out of it. So that was our main reason for joining, just to have that support network after birth. So I did the classes and I expressed some colostrum beforehand. Became a bit of a hobby, actually, just trying to get colostrum. I gave myself a challenge to get as much as I could. So, yeah, I ended up getting about 10 mils, which I was pretty happy.
Oh, nice. It's so satisfying once you start to get little drops of it, right?
I know. And it's so strange when the first drop comes out, you're like, oh, my gosh, like, it's just the weirdest feeling. So that's what I did to prepare. So not too much. My birth plan was really simple. I think as a nurse, I knew that a lot of things wouldn't go to plan. So I kept it really simple and just wanted to create just a calming environment. And had an epidural. That was probably my main want for the birth. Was I just didn't want to feel it, basically.
So you obviously planned on going to the hospital to give birth then?
I planned on going to Auckland Hospital,
Awesome. Cool. And did your labour end up starting spontaneously? Do you want to take us through that and how far along you were if it did? And then, into your labour and birth story.
Yeah, sure. So my due date was the 27th of April. So got to my due date. I still had no signs about labor coming on. So I had a ultrasound just to check on baby and make sure everything was okay. I think a couple days later. And then on the Friday, I was 40+3 and I just woke up in the morning just with some really light, like period cramping. And I think I just had a feeling that this was the day that I was going to go into labor. So I called my sister and told her to come up because her mum and Kian were going to be there for the birth. So I called her and she flew up from Christchurch that morning. And at about 7 a.m., I was just walking to the bathroom and I stopped in the doorway to have a chat to Kian and my water broke and it just like literally just gushed out everywhere, just like the movies. And I just thought I was peeing myself for the first minute and I was like, oh, this is really embarrassing. But I realized that my water was breaking and I sort of went into a bit of a panic. I think it's like the same feeling you get when you go on a roller coaster and you can't get off but you want to. It just felt like, okay, what if I'm gonna have to give birth, like I've got no choice now. So I think that anxiety of being ignorant to the fact that I had to give birth and then suddenly faced with the reality of this is happening. So I had a little bit of a freak out on the toilet while my waters were breaking, but I sort of pulled myself together and I was determined to enjoy that last day of freedom. My sister came up and we met my dad for brunch while my water was breaking on the chair in the cafe. So, and it was a really nice cafe. So in hindsight, that was a really terrible idea. I was just timing my like contractions while I was eating my Eggs Benedict, but so I think the waiter was a bit shocked about that, but and then we just came home and chilled for the rest of the day and my contractions were really just irregular and they weren't too painful for the rest of the day. And then I called the hospital and they just said to come in with the usual signs that 5 minutes apart, consistent contractions for an hour, I think, something like that. So we just waited around for that. So that continued up until about 7 p.m. and I was really hungry. So we decided, again, this was a really terrible idea, but we went out for dinner. I live in Ellerslie, so we're quite close to Mexico. So we went, we were just going to get like a quick bite to eat. And at that point, I wasn't having like really bad contractions still. And as soon as we walked in, I was like getting the contractions ramped up a lot. So we decided it was probably a really bad idea, and everyone was giving us funny looks. So we just got some Mexican, like takeout Mexican on the way home, just got some nachos, and then came home and ate them. And then, yeah, my contractions started ramping up, yeah, a lot by that point.
Yeah. And so what sort of happened from there? Did you decide to go into the hospital, or, yeah, what next?
So I just called up the hospital and said that my contractions were becoming more regular, and they basically said that like I might get sent home if I go in too early, so just try and hold off at home for as long as possible. So that's what I did, and I just sort of dimmed the lights in my bedroom and just sent everyone out into the lounge. I think my sister and my mum and Ken were just watching a movie while I was in my bedroom. I just wanted to be alone, which was, yeah, I think quite surprising for me. I didn't want anyone being near me, or I just, yeah. So I just labored for probably 2 to 3 hours at home, and my contractions were about 5 minutes apart for 2 to 3 hours. I definitely tried to wait until the last minute just so I could go and get the epidural and give birth, basically. Yeah. So I called up again at about midnight, and they said to come in. So mum and my sister dropped me off, me and Ken off at the hospital, and we walked up to labour and delivery. And yeah, they put us in a room and put the monitoring on my tummy. And at that point, the contractions were, yeah, they were pretty painful. I don't know how else to explain it. Yeah, they were getting really painful. And the midwife checked me, and she told me I was only 1 centimetre dilated, which was really deflating. I think I thought I was a lot further on because my contractions were so painful. And yeah, so I told my mum and my sister just to go home and get some rest, because we thought I'd probably be in there for, you know, 24 hours before I gave birth, sort of thing. And so they went home, and I just kept laboring. We dimmed the lights in the room and just had some music on, and I got on the Swiss ball, and it was just, yeah, bouncing up and down and trying to distract myself in any way I could. And Kian was, yeah, just rubbing my shoulders and trying to coach me through breathing during the contractions. And yeah, at that point it was really, really tough. The midwife came in and gave me some gas in air. And at that point, it had been about an hour since I'd arrived at hospital. So, so I just kept laboring in the room, and things started to ramp up a lot. There wasn't much time between contractions, and I projectile vomited everywhere, like literally across the room, basically onto the other walls. And the midwife came in and reassured me that it was just the gas making me nauseous, and it was nothing to worry about, and it's completely normal. So again, I didn't think I was very far along in my labor at that point, just because I was only 1 centimeter an hour ago. So yeah, I was begging her for the epidural, and she just said, no, like you're too early into labor, we can't give it to you yet. And yeah, so that carried on for about an hour. So it had been 2 hours since I was last checked, and I got back up onto the bed, and yeah, at that point the contractions were just like, you can't even describe them. They were just so painful. I couldn't think. I could hardly breathe. I was just trying to, yeah, get through them. I think everything I'd prepared for had sort of gone out the window at that point, and I'd accepted the fact that my body had just taken over. That's when the midwife and the doctor came in, and they were about to organize the epidural for me because I was in a lot of pain. And then I just got this overwhelming feeling that I needed to push, and I just I just screamed at them and I was like, I want to push, I want to push. And then the look on their faces were like pure shock because they probably thought I was like 2 centimeters dilated and I was just being really dramatic. But and I was being dramatic, but I think I had a good reason. And the doctor ran over and he cut my underwear off with scissors. And basically said that, like, he needs to check me. And I was like, no, 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 like, I don't want you to check me. I think in the back of my mind, I knew that I was about to push the baby out and I couldn't get the epidural. And I was, in denial. I didn't want to do it. I was just refusing to do it. I was like, no, I'm not pushing him out. I'm not doing it. And he was like, well, it's too late for the epidural. And he checked me and he basically said, yeah, I was fully dilated and the baby's head was coming out. So, yeah, I think I went into a bit of, shock at that point. And then, I started pushing. I didn't really have much choice. I think my body started pushing and I just had to go along with it. And I was, I was a mess. I was like screaming at them. I was like, help me, please. Like, give me the epidural and, but at that point it was too late, and at some point in that time I accepted the fact that I just had to just crack on and start pushing and get it over with. I just calmed myself down a lot and
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ian's hand and held the doctor's hand on either side of me and started pushing with each contraction, and they noticed that Blake's heart rate was dropping, so they sort of told me to hurry up and and I had to just push as hard as I could, and obviously I could feel absolutely everything, which was it was horrible. There was a lot going through my mind because you're trying to, birth your baby and make sure they're safe, and you've got that pain and the fear. And I think that was really, it was really mentally challenging. It was more so than the pain. I think it was the fear of having to give birth. So that was really, really scary. His heart rate kept dropping, so I basically pushed him out within 30 minutes, and he was born with the cord wrapped around his neck twice, and I looked down and he was lifeless pretty much, just lying in between my legs, blood everywhere, and I just remember looking down. Ken was crying and he was just pale and limp and looked lifeless. So I was just like screaming at them to please help him and asking them what was wrong with him, and they asked Ian to push the emergency bell, and a whole lot of people came running in and they took him over to the area where they pop the baby on after they're born, the little incubator thing, and they worked on him for a couple minutes and thankfully he came back. I think he was just like shocked, and he let out a little cry, and we were very relieved. So it was very intense and fast.
And how did you did they give him to you sort of straight after he started crying, or what sort of happened with that?
So they just put him straight on my chest, and after that, like, I didn't feel any pain at all. I was just relieved, I think, that it was all over, and I think I was proud of myself for you know, birthing a human. I think I was just like, I was definitely in shock, but I was, I was relieved. He went straight on my chest, and I definitely didn't feel those, you know, overwhelming feelings of love. I definitely didn't. I think I felt just, shock. I was pretty numb. So he was on my chest for about 2 hours, which was really nice. I think the midwife was trying to make it up to me.
Because
she didn't organize the epidural earlier, and now she was like, she just left us to it. She was really good. I just breastfed him straight away, and it was really nice. And then Kian got to have a hold, and
Awesome. And did you need any stitches or anything like that?
No, I didn't tear at all, which was pretty amazing. Physically I was fine. Like I felt fine. Which was a big relief. But I think it was just more mentally. I was definitely struggling a little bit.
For sure. And did you stay in hospital then for long?
So I gave birth at 2 a.m. and we went to birth care at 7 a.m. I forgot to mention he was born on my birthday. My whole pregnancy I was adamant that he wasn't going to be born on my birthday, and I think he was adamant that he would be. So so we went over to birth care, and throughout the day I had a lot of visitors, which I think in hindsight I wish I didn't. I wish we'd had that time just to ourselves, but I think because it was my birthday and everyone was so excited that he was here, they just wanted to come and see him. And so we went to birth care for about 4 days, I think, 3 or 4 days.
And I guess once the shock of the initial sort of, you know, fast ending to your birth wore off, and you wanted the epidural but you didn't get one, and quite a whirlwind sort of end to your birth. So how did you process those feelings after those first few days, and what did that look like for you?
They were hard. They were really hard. I think I was numb. I think I was, I didn't feel many emotions probably for the first sort of 1 to 2 months after giving birth. I think my brain had just sort of shut that part out, just was just focusing on, you know, the baby and keeping him healthy, and so I think that was it was really difficult for me mentally. Like I said, I didn't tear or anything. Physically, the sorest part of my body was my throat from screaming so much. But everything else felt, it felt fine. And I, obviously the lack of sleep I really struggled with. I had insomnia as well. So, I think when the baby was asleep, I put so much pressure on myself. Like, I have to sleep now, or I'll be up again for another 24 hours, that I actually didn't end up sleeping. That was really, really difficult. But the midwives were amazing. They like made me a toasted sandwich and gave me a hot chocolate when I had a mental breakdown at 3 a.m. because I couldn't sleep. And, you know, sometimes that's all you need. You just need to, like, you know, take that pressure off. And my milk came in on the second night, which was a really strange feeling. Like, I literally felt it like flood in. And I basically looked like I had a boob job after about 5 minutes. Like, it was really weird. I just was breastfeeding him, and initially didn't have that many challenges. It was more just the pain of having really engorged breasts. That was the hardest part initially. But down the track, things definitely got a bit harder sort of initiate the breastfeeding journey for us.
And so what do you want to take us through? What sort of happened there from a breastfeeding perspective?
Yeah, sure. So the first couple of weeks were okay, and then I got thrush, and Blake got thrush on his in his mouth as well. So it was really, really painful to breastfeed. Like, it felt like I was being stabbed every time I put him on. Like, I was crying and sweating, and it was like really horrible. I definitely didn't want to continue breastfeeding, but I felt that pressure to continue, I think. Not from anyone else but myself, I think. I didn't want to put him on formula just because I think I was just, yeah, told throughout my pregnancy that breastfeeding was the best thing to do, and I, yeah, I felt a lot of pressure to continue doing that. Yeah,
so. It's like a societal pressure, right? Like, no one's even sort of putting it on you, but it's innate and it's there. I definitely know that feeling.
Yeah, definitely. And then looking back, I'm like, why? I don't know why I put so much. Like, it's actually not a big deal. No, yeah, but obviously, as a first time mum, you just feel so much pressure to get everything right. About 10 days postpartum, we went over to Waiheke, where my mum lives, just to get a bit of help from her. And that's where my journey got really hard, my postpartum recovery at that point. I was still passing quite big blood clots. They were bright red. I thought that was normal, but apparently it isn't. it was quite painful. And then on the ferry over to Waiheke, while I was breastfeeding Blake, I just felt some tenderness in my stomach, and I didn't really think much of it. I thought, you know, it could be anything. It could be constipation, or after giving birth, you sort of can explain away any symptom that you have. That tenderness sort of continued throughout the afternoon after we got to Waiheke, and throughout the night, it definitely got a bit more painful. When I was breastfeeding Blake, I couldn't have him like lie on my stomach. I had trouble walking. I sort of curled over and and then the next day, things sort of got a bit worse for me, just around that tenderness and the stomach pain, and the bleeding sort of ramped up a little bit. So I called my midwife, and she said that it might be abnormal, or it might also just be, you know, constipation or something like that. So again, I sort of explained away my symptoms, and then I had a chat to my mum, and we decided if I was still feeling, you know, sore that afternoon, we would just pop up to the GP. And we're on Waiheke, so they close at 5, and obviously you're sort of stuck on the island after 5. There's not really any doctors around. So we just thought we'd go before they closed. We just popped up to the GP. And at that point, I was feeling quite lethargic and unwell. Still had that pain and was feeling quite hot and, sweating and just feeling generally quite unwell. So, we went up to the GP, and my blood pressure was like through the roof. My heart rate was through the roof. My temperature was over 38 degrees. So they definitely thought I had some sort of infection. So they palpated my abdomen, and it was really tender around where my uterus was. So they thought that I had endometritis, which is a inflammation an infection of the lining of the uterus. So they arranged an ambulance to come over and just pop me on the ferry over to Auckland, just in case things, you know, were getting worse. So the ambulance crew came, and by that point, like, I was lying on the bed in the GP, I was shaking, I was freezing cold, but I was sweating, and my temperature was through the roof, and I was just so dehydrated. I just remember just feeling like so, so thirsty. And the doctor there sort of tried to get a line in me probably 5 or 6 times to give me some antibiotics. Just, I needed that initial dose to keep that infection from progressing. And I was literally getting worse by the minute. It really like shocked me how bad I got and how fast it was from having a tender stomach to literally being lying on the bed and not being able to move and sweating and yeah, just being really dehydrated. So they couldn't get a line in me, and Mum in her panic ran down to the petrol station and bought me 4 Powerades. And she ran back up, and I think I had 4 Powerades within an hour, just sculled them all down just so I could rehydrate myself, so they could get that line in, because obviously if you're dehydrated, your veins basically collapse. Yeah. And yeah, the ambulance came and they diagnosed me with sepsis at that point, which is what happens when an infection spreads throughout the body. So it's just your whole body responding to an infection rather than just the localized area. So that's, I know how serious that is. And as a nurse, I think that hindered me a lot being a nurse, because I think I knew the seriousness of it, and I knew that it can be really dangerous. And it's actually one of the main reasons that women die after giving birth is developing sepsis. So yeah, for me it was really frightening. And then I had Blake crying because he was hungry, but I couldn't feed him because I was too sick, and Mum was running around like a headless chicken, like panicking.
Yeah, I can just imagine it. I just picture my mum and imagine what that would be like, just total chaos.
Yeah, she's basically like writing my funeral speech at that time, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's God. Where I get my dramatic tendencies from, is from her. But no, love her, but yeah. It wasn't that helpful at the time. It sort of sent me into a panic. So the ambulance staff tried to get a line in, they couldn't, and then they at that point decided that it would be best if I was helicoptered to Auckland Hospital, just because I needed to get those antibiotics in, and I was getting worse by the minute. So yeah, we drove to the sports fields on Waiheke and the ambulance landed. It was very dramatic. And at that point, I was feeling a little bit better because I'd sculled all the Powerades, a little bit more hydrated. So the intensive care doctor from the helicopter came on board, and he managed to get a line in first time in my hand, which was just such a relief. I think at that point I knew that I would be okay. And yeah, he gave me some fentanyl, which was great. Sort of got me a bit out of it mentally. So I think that helped me relax a bit more as well. So yeah. And they loaded me into the helicopter, and initially they said Blake and Ken couldn't come because of the lack of space, and they could only have a certain amount of people on the helicopter, but we managed to convince them, and we strapped Blake into his car seat on the helicopter, and they put some tiny little earmuffs on him, and we gave him a dummy, and he sat next to me in the helicopter, and he fell asleep within I think about 30 seconds of taking off, because it's the ultimate white noise machine, I think. It was just like, yeah. Just like, yeah, lulled him to sleep, and he was having the time of his life, I think. So we were taken to Auckland Hospital for that.
God, what a ride, going from thinking that you just had a normal postpartum symptom to all of a sudden being helicoptered to Auckland Hospital. I can't imagine how you sort of felt during that time, and what sort of happened from there? Like, how do they deal with the sepsis, and how long were you in hospital for, and yeah, what was that like for you?
Yeah, so I went to resus and ED, and they gave me a whole lot of fluids and more antibiotics and pain relief, and they just monitored me there for a bit. And then I went up to the maternity ward and was just monitored there and was on antibiotics for, I think, 3 days. And yeah, so that was really difficult having Blake with me during that time, because obviously I was still not sleeping. I was really run down and I had this infection and I was trying to breastfeed, which was really painful. Yeah, it was really overwhelming, I think. Yeah, that was tough. And my milk supply completely dropped after I had sepsis. I think it was just my body's response. It wasn't a priority, I think, making milk in the big scheme of things. Yeah, so yeah, that was really tough. Yeah.
Yeah. And so with Blake, with you in the hospital, did they offer you formula to feed him, or were you still trying to breastfeed for that whole time, or what happened there?
Yeah, I just pumped instead. So
yeah, okay.
I was trying to pump to keep up my milk supply. And Blake at that point was having trouble latching on. So I thought at that point it was just easiest just to pump and then someone else could give him a bottle while I could rest. Yeah, so at that point I was still really determined to keep breastfeeding, just again the pressure I put on myself to not use formula. But in the end I did end up supplementing with formula, and I've continued that up until now. So he's been taking formula since a couple weeks postpartum.
Yeah. And how long did you end up spending in the hospital with sepsis, and what was your recovery like from that?
I was only in hospital for a few days, but I sort of convinced them that I was okay and just so I could go home and be in my own space. I think at that point I was tired of being the patient, and I think I was going to be a lot happier at home. So yeah, I went home, but again, in hindsight, probably wasn't the best idea. I think I didn't fully recover for about 2 weeks after getting the sepsis. So I was really, really fatigued, sore. My whole body was, still aching. I think my body was just exhausted after, giving birth and then fighting the infection. I was pretty run down and exhausted, and looking back on photos I was like, oh my gosh, like I had no color, I was just so pale. I think I just put a lot of pressure on myself just to carry on, and where in hindsight I probably should have rested a lot more and taken it a bit more slowly.
Oh, so hard as a new mum, though, or as any type of mum, experienced or new, when you've got a new baby, like you're trying to recover not only from pregnancy and birth, and you're with a newborn who doesn't sleep, and then you're really unwell. It's just, yes, that's such a difficult time and thing for your body to go through, but mentally as well, I can only imagine it was really hard and exhausting too.
Yeah, exactly. And still, mentally trying to process the birth and adjust to motherhood, and it was a lot more difficult than I thought it would be. And I think I probably didn't ask for as much help as I should have at the time. I tried to just be super mum and do it all. My stubbornness coming out,
yeah. So, and I guess how do you feel now, like obviously you're a little bit further down the track, and you've reflected, obviously you've said a few sort of things in hindsight, but I guess when you think about your birth experience in particular, which at the time you said that you were quite shocked by, and I guess how have you managed to process that, and what do you sort of feel towards it now?
I think talking about it helps so much. I think initially I shut down about it. I didn't want to talk about it. It brought back like all the feelings that surrounded the birth, and all those like the fear and anxiety I felt during the birth. So I think if I had talked about it earlier, I would have been a lot better off. And I think, yeah, I might have had postpartum depression, or maybe quite mildly. I was functioning fine. Like, I, you know, got up in the morning and I did everything I should have and looked after myself reasonably well. But at the same time, emotionally, I shut myself out a lot. I think the lack of support for new mums is really shocking. And emotional support, I would say. I think I felt a little bit left in the lurch, and just like I had to fend for myself. So I think, yeah, so talking about it helped a lot, talking to Kian about it, because he was also a bit traumatized after seeing Blake, you know, come out lifeless and having to support me through that. So I think, honestly, just talking about it and time, I think time does heal everything. It's so, like, cliche, but
No, I think there'll be a lot of people who sort of listen to your story and really relate to those feelings of just, you know, not being able to sort of process it, I guess, at the time. But it's probably really helpful to hear from your perspective now, being a little bit further on down the track, what sort of helped you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think at the end of the day, you're mental health is so much more important than you think, and not putting yourself first, especially in that newborn phase, and just doing everything for your baby. At the time it might seem like a good idea, but it catches up with you, I think, and shutting yourself off emotionally, it's not good for your baby, it's not good for yourself. And yeah, I think just reaching out to someone and talking about it, even if you feel like you've got nothing to complain about. I mean, I had a healthy baby. I had a really good physical recovery. So technically, I had a good birth. Textbook, you know, the textbook birth, quick.
But we all experience, you know, trauma differently, right? Like, our perceptions of birth are all different, and your sort of plan and what you wanted, and then also having him come out and not being sort of what you expected that to be like. Yeah, for sure, we all experience those things really differently. I think it's important to acknowledge that it doesn't always matter that we've got a healthy baby and we've had a quotation textbook birth, when actually, you know, you can still experience feelings of trauma out of that, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the bonding as well, like, it takes time to bond with another human being. Like, you can't expect a baby to come out and you're like, well, I know some people do feel like that, but I think a lot of people don't. And the further away I get from, you know, birth, and the more I get to know Blake, I just, fall in love with him more every day. And he's just like the most amazing little fun human being ever. So I think, don't put pressure on yourself, like, it will come, and just try and relax, and I think listen to your body as well. If I had listened to my body at the start of my infection, it would have been a lot less traumatic, and I would have avoided sepsis. It's so preventable, and if you get antibiotics as soon as that infection starts, it doesn't develop into sepsis. So I think listening to your body and trusting your instincts, and just at the end of the day, if nothing's wrong, then great, like, at least you've gone and got checked out. But yeah, it's better to be safe than sorry, I think. Yeah,
awesome. Well, thank you so much, Liv, for joining me on the podcast and sharing your story. And I apologize for the little big noises that the little guy made throughout our recording, but I've really enjoyed having you on the podcast. And yeah, I think you've got a really unique and important story to share, so just super grateful that you're willing to take the time. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me and taking the time to listen to my story. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, and apologies for the quality of parts of that recording. I did have a pretty unwell little baby at that stage, but he's doing much better now. So yeah, I hope that you enjoyed the episode with Liv, and I look forward to bringing you another awesome episode next week.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.